Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like $1 million.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast, Climbing in Heels, is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, this is Paris Hilton. Trapped in Treatment is back, and this season we're taking on WASP, the Worldwide Association of Specialty Programs and Schools.
They held us in dog cages. They starved us. They beat us.
He was trying to brand us. We were going to become the McDonald's of kid treatment.
Join my host as they unravel the story of the largest and most shocking organization in the history of the troubled teen industry. Listen to Season 2 of Trapped in Treatment on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, dude.
The 90s called.
With Christine Taylor and David Lasher.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Hey, Dude, the 90s called. I am one of your co-hosts, Christine Taylor.
And hi, I'm David Lasher.
Hi, David
We're going
Lasher.
Second, both names now.
Yeah, because we didn't see each other last week. So we've got to get reacquainted here. We had a week off.
People might not know who we are.
Yes, people might have totally forgotten. Our podcast that came up this week was another Q&A, and people seem to love the Q&As of our Hey Dude days.
Yeah, I love the Q&As. I love like the memories and, you know, you and I, you recall things for me that I didn't remember and vice versa, I'm sure, right?
Yes. I know. We got to keep those going. So we're going to keep the questions coming, and I know David and I talked about one of these days, we'll watch a couple episodes together and like see if that sparks any memories. I have not watched enough episodes to remember.
Where does Hey Dude live? Is it on? It's on a streaming service, right?
Yeah, one of the streaming services. Yes,
it is.
You can find it. But we have got a very cool, very 90s guest today.
Very, very strong guest.
Whoo, I'll say. Does anybody remember? David, do you remember?
American Gladiators? Gladiator? Yes, I do.
I just remember that show being on all the time, like any time of day, late night, during the afternoon. Like it must have been syndicated forever. But I want to talk to our guest who went by the stage name Nitro. But his real name is Dan Clark. And so why don't we welcome him in and let's hear what he wants to be called. I'm going to guess not Nitro.
Hey, David. Hey, Christine.
Yes.
Hey, buddy.
Dan.
Thanks for joining us.
Hi.
Look at you, by the way. You look awesome. You haven't aged. Although You're not wearing spandex, so it's hard to recognize you and not in the spandex.
Hey, Christine, you didn't make that request.
Damn. Oh, go.
Wait, you want to do a wardrobe? We can do a wardrobe change real quick.
like one of those TikTok things.
Exactly. Exactly. Oh, welcome. Thank you so much for coming on. We were just saying that our memory of your show in the 90s was like, it was omnipresent. It was sort of always on. It was such a part of popular culture. It fascinates me. I have so many questions to ask, but it's, yeah, so we're thrilled to have you. I'm so glad that this worked out.
Yeah, me too. Excited.
I mean, American Gladiators was like probably the first hugely successful reality show.
So, you know, for us, when we were doing Gladiators, you know, it was just a job. We had no idea what it was going to turn into. You know, I was 23, 24 years old. I'd just gotten cut by the Los Angeles Rams. And I had a two-year-old kid. And I was, and baby mama was like, hey, I need a check every month. I don't care what you do. And I was running out of cash. And for some reason, I had this great idea. But, you know, I had no acting experience. I knew nobody in Hollywood. And this was right in the precipice of the 90s. It was 89. And I said, I'm going to come to LA and be an actor. You know, and she's like, are you out of your mind? That's the dumbest idea I've ever heard. You're going to come to Hollywood 1990. You don't know anybody. You've got a two-year-old kid. You know, good luck. So I literally was here for about 8 months and I was running out of money. And I had like $600 left in my bank account when I got this audition for this show looking for athletes, you know, who were good in front of the camera. And it was like this little light went off. And I was reading something that they had back in the 90s called the drama log, which is where you find your castings from. A little printed paper at 7-Eleven, you find your castings from. And I went inside and I looked at this casting and it said that athletes are good in front of the camera. That's what we're looking for. So I said, oh, that must be me. So we went and tried out for this thing it's weird. What was just a job in spandex became something, you know, that was part of 90s pop culture. And it was never more evident because it's been so many years than when Netflix's Muscle and Mayhem came out a few months ago. And we debuted it at number one in America, number six globally, with over 15 million hours watched in the first week. Then it was like, we were a part of something. I think the 90s kids really loved the show.
Right. Like that sort of after the effect that all these decades later, this was real. Like this really made an impact. I mean, the little show that David and I did a million years ago, we had it was similar for us. I mean, probably not that many views, but it was all these years later that people started coming out of the woodwork and saying, we grew up watching you. We loved you on that show. How incredible to see and globally, by the way, with Gladiators. I mean, this was not just, I know it's called American Gladiators, but you guys were global sensations. Right.
It was interesting, you know, after Muscles and Mayhem, I got so many different people sliding into my DMs. I'm sounding like a cool young hip person my DMs from all over the world. Well, I got sliding in my DMs from what is that show on Netflix? It's where you can't see people. Love is Blind. Then one of the girls after the show said, okay, boys, slide into my DMs.
And there was no DM in the 90s, though. Right. No one would know what you're talking about back then.
Right. So I started getting all these people reaching out to me on social media, just, you know, from all over the world, you know, from England, from Germany, from France, from all these different places saying, you know, I loved your show. And similar to what you guys, I'm sure, heard, I loved your show. But I think what was touching was the impact that it had on. Had two people at that time. Hey, that show was the show I used to watch with my dad. It was the one family show we would watch on Saturday mornings. Or, hey, you know, I used to, you know, rough up my little brother in the backyard playing Breakthrough and Conquer. That was such a monumental time. And I think the best shows that are about the 90s are the ones that put you in a time capsule. And they take you back to that time when, you know, you feel like you're spending a moment in nostalgia with a good friend. And when I created Muscles of Mayhem, that was one thing I said. And I said, look, I want this to feel nostalgic, like you're back there at that special time of the 90s. And, you know, the 90s for me was a fantastic time. I was a young guy in Hollywood, and I felt like the world was open. You know, I would go to Roxbury.
On Sunset.
Of course.
Yeah, well, now Roxbury, oh, you mean that movie? I had people say, oh, you mean that movie with Chris Kattan? I'm like, no, it existed. It was a place.
That was hottest club, right, when we first moved here.
D, it was like the hottest club. And I remember before getting the show, trying to get into the Roxbury up the back doorway, which is a VIP room. And they're like, dude, get out of here. You're not getting in here. They had the guy with the clipboard there in that club. I don't remember if you guys remember Vertigo, downtown Hollywood.
Yeah.
Prince eventually owned. Yeah, Vertigo is another club downtown Hollywood. Prince eventually owned, you know, that club. But it was the same kind of thing where, you know, you had the red barricade and you had the cool guy with the sunglasses and the long hair with the clipboard.
What about Skybar? That to me was like, once I could get into Skybar and I knew the doorman, I felt like, okay, I belong here.
Yeah, you felt like
and
you
the Viper
made it
Room, the Viper Room. Oh, yes, yeah. It was. They were all along that strip. But you're right. When it came to the guy with the clipboard, it was always that thing of, are we cool enough? Are we famous enough? Are we, you know, popular right. enough?
And this one guy is the judge of that.
Exactly. Right.
And he always looked the same. He always had long hair and sunglasses.
Because right? It was the 90s too, yeah. Right?
And he always, like when I first got him, he wouldn't let me and my roommate in. It was always like the models he's letting in, the famous people. I think David Faustino would get in and I couldn't get in. And I was like, he's only 5 foot. How's he getting in? Because in my world as an athlete, you know, your physicality is what opened the door. And all sure. of a sudden you come to a new world, Hollywood, where the physicality doesn't always matter. You know, if you're David Faustino, you get in. It didn't matter as much, you know, it was about the performer. But still in the 90s, that to me, that was still the age where, you know, what in the, I think in the 70s and the 80s, the buffness, the muscularity, the masculinity was something that was kind of a circus sideshow of Venice Beach. That spilled into the mainstream. And now, you know, our heroes were, you know, Schwarzenegger, you know, in the Terminator, it was Von Damme and it was Rambo. Stallone. Mm-hmm, right. Mm-hmm. So this was the beginning of this toxic masculinity before it was toxic that spilled over into, you know, the mainstream. And that was, I think those guys, you know, Stallone and Schwarzenegger really paved a way for the American gladiators. You know, people were looking for something different. And until that time, as you said earlier, David, there had never been a game show that had the physical requirements that American Gladiators did. It was always Wheel of Fortune. It was Jeopardy. Well, let's make a deal.
It was using your brain, right? It all had to do with trivia or what you knew. It was not, there was nothing physical like that, right?
And that's what was so wonderful about Gladiators. I mean, they had lightning in a bottle. They took the best of two worlds. They took the best of sports, you know, football, basketball, wrestling, whatever the sports were, and all the trivia game shows, and they put them into one where people who still had that belief in themselves as an athlete, it gave them a platform to come and test their valor, their athletic ability against these larger than life figures in the American Gladiators with a chance to win. I think the first season was, you know, $10,000 and a brand new car.
Oh, how times have changed. And that was huge back then. But
well, have they changed? Well, I mean, look, Ninja Warrior is still on.
But
is hot with lava. Yeah,
no, you paved the way. What I meant was the cash prizes, like a 10, like now it's so much bigger. Right. It's always,
like Austin,
you know,
Powers at $1 million.
Right, $10,000.
In today's dollars, that's not a lot of money.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, what is $1 million, right?
Right.
Well, look, in the night, when I first moved here in the 90s, you know, the dream. was to one day live in Mulholland Boulevard. I got here and I would drive my my little car up Mulholland over there in the Hollywood Hills. And I think one day, man, I'll have made it. If one, I can get into the Roxbury. And two, if I have a house on, Mulholland Boulevard, and back then the houses were under $1 million. I would go look at open houses, and they'd have a nice house on the hill and it would be like $870,000. I'd be like, oh my God, $870,000. One day, now it's like in Hollywood, you can't even get a condo for $870,000. But yeah, so everything has changed. Everything has changed.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together. We'll cry together and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am like I am where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Can I just back up for a second? Because I want to pick this up where we left off. But you moved to LA and you were a Los Angeles Ram football player. How did that come about? You were a college athlete and got drafted by the Rams?
No, I went to San Jose State as a D1 college scholarship athlete up in NorCal.
Amazing.
I did not get picked up, so I went to the Rams as a free agent. And I stayed on about maybe like half a season. And then that was the end of the football career. I had an injury my senior year in college that really curtailed the football dream. Mm. And, you know, it was interesting because you spend your whole life chasing something. And then in the snap of a finger, yep. you know, it's gone. And for me, that was just really a time of, you know, what do I do with my life? And I knew, you know, David, that for some reason, you know, I wasn't consciously aware. I had this desire to be seen. You know, my biggest fear, my biggest nightmare was just to be an ordinary dude. You know, it was just to be a regular dude. You know, I think we're all given this gift of life. You know, we were all fought and got here somehow. And it's an obligation for us to shine, regardless of what that means. You know, you can shine as a school teacher, you know, influencing these young kids. But for me, you know, I think I really was looking for validation. And, you know, with football, you get immediate validation when you make a great play. The crowd roars. Ah, they applaud. And as a misguided youth, I mistook that applause and adoration for love.
Right.
So really chasing fame for me was a lot about filling those empty places inside. And then it was interesting in the mid-90s, I would say 94, 95, when American Gladiators was at its peak. And we did a tour. We sold out Madison Square Garden. We did all these things, or these toys, these dolls. Oh, wow. And finally, you know, Christine, I had everything I wanted. You know, I had money, I had success, I had, you know, a reasonable amount of fame. But the strange thing was, I thought that would fill that little bit of sadness inside. And, you know, when it didn't, and when I found myself, you know, partying like a rock star in the 90s, like David Lee Roth, you know, I just found myself, you know, feeling a little empty. And then I just said, you know what, you know, there was one too many mornings where I would find myself, you know, drinking high the night before. And then mornings I would just wake up and, you know, I'd just be crying. And it was just weird. I said, I got everything, but it feels like nothing, you know, something's wrong. That happened like, you know, two or three times. And I just finally said, you know what, something's wrong here. You know, I'm not a genius, but I know I have everything. It feels like nothing and I need to get help. And so right around 93, you know, it's this big, you know, strong, masculine guy. And I raised my hand and I said, you know, look, I need some help. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel funny saying this because, you know, people say, oh my God. You know, if I had everything, if I had, you know, pardon the expression, chicks, you know, money, fame, all that stuff, I'd be so happy. You have no right to complain. And I can only tell you, you know, what I felt and how I felt. And, you know, maybe everybody should have tremendous success. So they'll see what they're chasing and what they're searching for isn't necessarily always the path to happiness and fulfillment.
Well, right. You can't find happiness and peace from the external. You can't. I mean, that can add layers. That can be a part of it. That can, you know, those are sort of icing on the cake. But it's an inside job, right?
I mean, that's a scary place to be, though, when you're trying to attain all these things and then you get them and then you're still not happy, then what do you do? I mean, so many people, you're definitely not alone mm-hmm. in that. You know, a lot of people have gone through that.
Yeah. And you're right, David. And what you said, Christine, too, is I know that now. I have a 12-year-old stepson, and sometimes he blames, you know, the coach, this teacher. And I said, man, it's not them. It's you. Life is an inside game. Mm-hmm. When you master yourself, it allows you to master everyone else. And, you know, for me, that's it's been, so you know, a 25, 30 year old journey of, you know, self-mastery. And it's the one that I'm still on today. You know, it took a long time to, you know, learn what causes fulfillment. I think happiness is a cheap word. You know, happiness is like a one night stand.
I agree. I agree.
It's a chocolate chip cookie, and then it's over.
Right. You know, it's you know, you really, really, I've learned that you gotta learn to love what you do. You've got to learn to love the process. You know, we've been, you guys, we've been here a long time. And if there's not something that you've learned to love about this and you only love the accolade or the success, you know, that success comes briefly. You're only going to be happy 2% of the time. Mm-hmm. You know, right. You got to learn to love the grind. You got to learn to love that feeling of, you know, self-accomplishment, of self-pride, of self-esteem by doing something that you say you can do. If you can just make that one, keep that one promise to yourself, you know, do what you say you're going to do. I mean, happiness, contentment, fulfillment, a whole mm-hmm. world opens up to you.
Mm-hmm. What I think is so cool, though, and Christine and I are big sports fans, and my son was captain of his varsity basketball team for 2 years. And he just started a college, and he's playing in his fraternity league. But I remember he said, this is his last game. He said, this is the last time I'm going to compete ever, like in an organized way. And I said, like, the lessons you've learned, the friendships you've made, the teamwork, the work ethic, the leadership, all these things you will take with you for the rest of your life. And you literally, I mean, Division I football player, played for the Rams, but all these things, maybe you didn't become, you know, Joe Montana, but have these the lessons and the things that you learned through sports, you brought through your whole life.
Yeah, agreed. You know, I didn't become Joe Montana, but I became Danny Lee Clark. I'm damn proud of, you know, the man that I've become.
Yes.
I can say, put both my feet firmly on the ground and say, yeah, I became Dan Clark, and I'm a powerful man.
That's so beautiful. And what I love, you know, something you brought up early when we started talking about the show, when, you know, in talking about it being so unique and one of a kind of goes back to what you were saying, David. This was American Gladiators was an opportunity to bring on contestants who were athletes, who right. were competitors, who had something to offer, who wanted that again. You know what I mean? Like, maybe they weren't competing on teams anymore, but they could come on the show. Talk to us about, there's so many questions I want to ask. First of all, did you have any say in naming yourself, or were you cast as Nitro? Because first of all, let's say some of the names. Malibu, Lace,
Malibu, great dude, shitty gladiator. Simple. Great dude, shitty gladiator. He played racquetball. He played racquetball, and you don't go and, you know, from a hand sport to a contact sport. And well, but what a great dude. But he just got his ass kicked that first 13 episodes over and over again. So they eventually
fired him. So maybe
Malibu
was the perfect name for him.
Well, they had that one clip, right, where it's on YouTube. It's got like a million views, where there's a guy coming down on an obstacle called a human cannonball, and he just swings into him. And Malibu there in his little tidy spandex is standing with this, you know, this little teeny shield. And this guy, 300 pounds, 200 pounds, hits him, and he knocks him off there. His knees hit him here. Then he gets off, and he gives the most legendary Spicoli interview. You know, I was like, dude, I was riding some waves. I was drinking some brews. Yeah, if you on your computer, go look that up, because that one clip right there to me encapsulates, you know, the 90s 100%.
Right, right.
You're going to head on over to Hawaii and jam with the Stones.
Yeah, exactly. So the names, yes. You know, it was so the first audition was over at this little park in Van Nuys before Van Nuys was cool. You know, it was like Van Nuys. I pull up in my car, and And, you know, there's like, you know, homeless people, there's graffiti. And I'm like, this isn't even a real audition. You know, if you have an audition, it's an offer. And I look out across the competitors because it was an open call in the 90s, man, anyone could show up. And you had so many people that were, I think, actors trying to be athletes. Mm-hmm. That, you know, there were people in leotards, leg warmers. And I remember specifically there was a guy doing sit-ups. And he had another guy holding his feet. You know, you hold your feet when someone does sit-ups. And this guy holding his feet had a sandwich in his hand. And every guy, the guy came up for the sit-up, he would take a bite of the sandwich. It's like, you know, I get in line, you know, like there's this long line. I get in the line and people are dressed up like in role-playing costumes. I think there was a guy like in Dungeons and Dragons and, you know, all this weird stuff. And what really made me almost leave is there is a guy dressed like a bear, like a grizzly bear in a costume. It was, like I said, it was gosh.
It sounds like a circus.
Yeah, right out of a movie or something.
It became a circus.
What did you wear? Sweats? Did you just wear, you know, when you showed up, did you just wear like a muscle shirt?
I think I wore my dolphin shorts and like one of those little tiny tank tops that you would just cut like on the, I get a t-shirt and then I would cut the sleeves off. And then I would try to leave that little anchor that goes over your shoulder to make it as thin as possible, you know, to show off the pecs. And I wore one of those little tiny, tiny tank tops. And I remember, I was about to walk away and then there was a gal who was doing the, God, I know I'm old when I say gal. You know, my girlfriend laughs at me because I'm still the guy at the restaurant and I see like the person helping, if it's a female, say, hey, darling. She just looks at me. She's like, you're going to go to like the, you know, non-politically correct police if you keep calling females darling. I'm like, So anyway, there was this non-pronoun person taking a name, and I just was about to leave, and she called, and she said, I said, look, I'm out of here. And she said, no, you look like an athlete. Come here. Can you come? You want to come try these drills? So they were just football drills, tires, you know, ups and downs, you know, running back and forth. And then when it got over, she said, hey, we want you to come over here. We're going to put people on camera. And she handed me a paper with three characters, Malibu, which we know, the surfer guy, Gemini, who had split personality. And the third character was Evander. Loud, cocky, explosive, in your face. And I was born May 21st, so I actually wanted to be Gemini. And they were going around, and I just before I said Gemini, this huge, huge black dude, you know, who be Mike Horton, you know, huge, stepped in front of me and said, I'm Gemini. And I was like, all right, man. No beef with me.
You take Gemini. You got it.
And so then I ended up taking, you know, because I thought the name was stupid, Evander. So mm-hmm. I went on camera in character like they asked, and I started answering, you know, questions in character. Oh, what's your favorite movie? Terminator. You know, what's your favorite line? I'll be back. You know, what do you eat for dinner? And I'm like, I remember looking in the camera, growling, grimacing, going, raw meat, like that. And as soon as I say raw meat, the girl behind the camera says, cut, cut, thank you very much, that's enough. And I said, oh my God, what a tool. I'm walking to my car, you know, just cussing myself out the whole way. What a tool, raw meat. Why would you say raw meat? So a couple months go by, I do not hear a thing.
A couple months.
Oh, don't hear a thing. Remember, this was just a tryout in a park.
Right.
You know, you're doing tires. There are no costumes. There are no games. There's just a tryout in the park. A couple months go by. I don't hear a thing. My money has now run out. I was also bouncing at a bar at night. And I said, you know what? I couldn't afford to pay my son's child support. I went into Gold's Gym. I couldn't get in because I wasn't paying my membership. I went home. I remember looking in my cabinet, I open my protein jar and it's empty. And I said, that's the last straw. I literally packed my car. I had a Jeep. I packed my Jeep, was leaving town, was going down the 101, and I was passing the Hollywood sign in the hills. I remember 9 months earlier coming in, seeing that sign, pulling over, you know, the Hollywood sign, me and my buddy Jim, we pulled over, you know, we were like flexing, Hollywood, here we come, Hollywood, here we come. 9 months later, I remember driving by that sign as I failed and I've left Hollywood. And I remember just flipping it off and I go down the 101. and my pager buzzes. I'm like, I throw it across thing, but it keeps buzzing. So finally, I right past downtown LA, I pull over, and it's my agent. And he said, "Hey, I got you. You got a call back." And I said, "Dude, my car's packed. I'm done." And he says, "Well, it's for that athlete show that's looking for athletes who are good in front of the camera." And I just said, "Oh God, you know, I don't know." And then he said, "By the way, Dan, they really liked your raw meat line."
And I was yes.
And I was like, "Okay."
I love it.
And then he said, "It's on the lot at Universal," and I'd never been on the lot. So I turned my, you know, I turned my little car right around, went, pulled up, and went to that last audition, the callback, which was on the lot in a sound stage, and had the last audition that would determine, you know, if you would get on this show. They didn't even tell us a name. And the last audition was funny because here I am, you know, just like this is my last shot at a dream. And they had brought these college students in from Cal State Northridge, which isn't too far from Universal Studios. And they told these college students, a bunch of skinny frat boys, that, you know, "Hey, you're going to test out a new game show." And I'm sure, like you mentioned earlier, Christine, they thought it was going to be like a quiz game show. Let's make a deal. Right. And they gave these kids $40 a day, and they made them test the games against guys like me. And the very last thing of the day, you know, they're weeding out people. There are about like 12 of us left, and there's some, you know, all these college students left. They took a big thing of chalk, and they drew a football field 15 yards long and 10 yards wide on the concrete. They gave this kid, who must have been 150 pounds soaking wet, the football. And then they pointed to me they said, "Hey, kid, you got to run it past this guy."
Right. You know, a Division I athlete who played for the Rams. Okay.
Yeah. Who was on the juice, who was, know, who was hangry, who was roid raging because, you know, his dream had failed. And, you know, if I just make this one last tackle, you know, then
against this young college kid who's 150 pounds.
Yeah.
Oh,
so this poor guy. Yeah. So this kid runs at me, and I just, you know, I had smoke, you know, it's coming out of my ears. And he came at me, and I just was like, I hit him. I picked him up, and I slammed him on the asphalt. His head hits the back of the, you know, back of his head hits the concrete. The ball goes flying. I knocked him out. And all I hear is I'm standing over, and his ambulance, you know, someone get an ambulance.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, and then the paramedics are coming in, and I'm like, oh, my God, I might have hurt this kid. And I'm standing off to the side, and, you know, one of the producers, you know, he calls me over. And I said, "Hey, look, I'm sorry. I just, you know, I just kind of lost control a little bit." And he looks at me, and he said, "You know, I want you to keep losing control." And I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "You got the job." And I was like, "Oh, okay." But seeing that kid, you know, with the paramedics.
That's what they wanted. Oh my gosh. This is what's going on in reality TV today too. Like the most horrible situations is what they want. Anyway, that's unreal. Unbelievable. Yeah,
and it was almost that, you know, harbinger before the storm where, you know, I was too young to see it. Mm-hmm. And that first 13 episodes, they had no idea what they really wanted to do. And a lot of times the people, the first time they ever tried the games was when we did it on TV. There was no
true. There were no rehearsals. There were no test outs with stuntmen or anything.
No, we were the stuntmen. But again, I was 23, 24 years old. I think it was, you know, 1989. And you know, at that time I was so desperate, you said, "Here's $500, go fight Mike Tyson." I would have gotten the ring.
Yeah. I mean, right. So, but putting you in a situation where you have to tackle a 150-pound kid who's much lighter than you on pavement, that what did they think was going to happen? So like the show must have had safer parameters than
here's how. David, here's how safety happened. Shit, people got hurt. Shit got broke. We said, "Oh, we probably can't do that anymore." We had that game, which was like one of everyone's favorite games, is called Assault, where we had this tennis ball cannon, and it shot tennis balls out at 100 miles per hour Well, I'm trying to shoot you while you're trying to run through this course and shoot little things to hit this target. You hit the target above me and then you win, you know, you get the 10 points. But I'm firing pop, 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 tennis balls at you. Like I said, 100 miles an hour. And the first 13 episodes, okay, first 13 episodes, they didn't think until a guy got hit in the eye. It almost pulled out his eye. Yeah, it scratched his cornea. He couldn't see. They didn't think until after that. Hey, what do you guys think? Do you think we should wear goggles?
It was trial by fire. It was literally in the trenches working.
And a lot
out.
Of people got burned. And a lot of people got burned.
Ooh,
but wow. Again, you know, I look. You know, I have no regrets. I was grateful to have a job. You know, I'm grateful to be here today, you know, all these years later, talking with you guys, you know, reminiscing about, you know, the 90s, our past. And yeah, I do not have a single regret. Maybe my wrong regret is just I wish I would have done so many drugs during that time.
Well,
you know, but
it's such a different time than today where like every kid gets to play and every kid gets a trophy and everyone's a winner. I mean, you were, you know, 90s were, you know, it was a rougher time, but you were in the center of it. Like just whoever's the strongest and the baddest and the meanest wins.
Well, it was a simpler time, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was before the coddling of America. Like, look, I'm big on, you know, telling my stepson and my son, my oldest son, that I love them, you know, that they're important to me, that I care about them. I'm big on showing them, you know, vulnerability and masculinity within the masculinity. But I believe the way we build self-esteem is by earning things. You know, we have so many people that are lost that are looking for purpose and looking to feel good about themselves, but they don't know how to work. You work hard, then you feel good because you put that day's effort in, you know. And I think giving everybody a medal, whether they've earned it or not, sets up a false expectation that everything you do is going to be rewarded. And the way
that kid might not even want to be on that court or that field. You know what I mean? Wow. And that's not where their passion is anyway. Their parents are like, you're a football player. You're a basketball player. You're great. You're great. And maybe the kid wants to be playing the piano or painting or acting.
Yeah, it's hard. You know, like I said, I have a 12-year-old running around here, and it's such a hard thing to know, you know, as far as when you give them guidance and then push them in a direction versus when you force them to do something that they would never want to do.
Right.
You know, and I think too many times it goes to that place where there's no discipline at all. There's no accountability. There's no work ethic. And like you said earlier in the episode, David, about sports, you know, sports teaches you camaraderie. It teaches you leadership. It teaches you how to work. It teaches you how to advance. I mean, there's so many great things for boys and girls, men and women, that sports teaches you that later transfer to a, you know, a good life.
Through your whole life. Absolutely.
Yeah. They're basic fundamentals, but the number one thing, it teaches you to work, and it teaches you that there's a hierarchy. Look, you want to play. There's a guy that's better than you. The only way you're going to get better is you work hard and you play, you know, and if you work hard, you get better than him. Then you play. He gets injured. You get an opportunity. Your ass better be ready for that moment of opportunity. It's the same thing, yeah, as you guys know, in entertainment, right? You know, you got to be ready. You know,
what's that line? Preparation meets opportunity, right? That's when success.
I was going to say that even about the arts, because my kids are not athletes, but they're artists, they're performers, and they have also learned that way. You audition for the school play. If you can't sing that song, you get cut. You don't make that, you know, you really, it's the willingness to put yourself out there. And also as a parent, and David and I talk about this all the time on the show, we have to let them fail. We have to let them fall, make mistakes, which goes against every parental instinct in me. I mean, as the mama bear who just is, you know, I'm always like, please let me take care of you forever. But no, I have a friend who says that is called disabling your child. That is not how they're going to thrive in the world. And it's about letting them screw up, letting it happen.
There's a great book. I think it's Angela Duckworth. It's called Grit or something like this. I'm looking from across my bookshelf. It's not quite catching my eye across all of my books. Oh. there's just really one.
The library that we don't see.
And it's my own book. That's the only book I have in here. I'm just kidding. They did a lot of studies with young kids and who achieved more. And oddly enough, not oddly enough, but interestingly enough, it was the kids, not who got praise. You know, one of the things that they found that made kids quit early and not have grit was when you were saying, oh, you're perfect. Oh, you're so smart. Because they end up having that belief as who they are. Then when they fail, like, oh my God, but this is who I am.
They can't handle it.
Yeah, instead, what they found was when you compliment about their work effort. Hey, you really worked hard on that.
Right.
Wow, I can see you put some time in. Wow, that must feel good to accomplish it because you put the effort in. And my stepson's 12. And, you know, we, you know, live in this time where we can give our kids everything, right? You need a new bike here. Get a bike. You need a, you want a phone. This broke, that broke. It's no longer Christmas, Hanukkah, birthdays. Mm-hmm. They need something. We just live in an industrialized society where we're very fortunate where, you know, we can just go get it for him. And last year when he was 11, he asked for a phone. Now, he was going to a gifted school where there was a bus and sometimes his real dad picks him up and, you know, would need a communication. So it was a functional tool that he needed and he wanted a phone. And I just said, you got to earn it. And you'll know I'm a gladiator in my bones when he asked me.
What, he had to tackle you?
Yeah, for $40. But you'll know I'm a gladiator in my bones when I say to him, okay, you have to do something. You have to earn it. He's like, what? I said, 5,000 push-ups. He's like, what?
5,000?
5,000 push-ups.
Not at once.
No, I said, you have to do a total of 5,000 push-ups to get your phone. I wanted to give him, like they always talk about audacious goals, big, bodacious, audacious. Well, that sounded like breasts, big, bodacious, audacious goals. I don't know where the I don't know, gosh. I'm stuck in a 90s time where flap, 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 let me get out of here. Okay. So 5,000 push-ups. And for me, I believe that people with goals win once. People with systems in place win repeatedly. So I wanted to teach him a system where he could look at something big, something challenging, something he didn't believe he could do.
Overwhelming, right? Even, right? Something very overwhelming, right?
I could never do 5,000 push-ups. Right? And most people think that. But I wanted to teach him a system that he could use over and over again to accomplish goals in his life. And he said, I can't do 5,000 push-ups. He calls me, you know, Dan, are you kidding me? And I said, well, could you do... Because he's a very fit kid. Could you do 25 in a day? He says, and I said, anytime throughout the day? He says, oh, yeah, I could do that. I could, you know, get up in the morning, do five right out of bed, do five after breakfast, five after school, 25. He says, I can do 25 push-ups easy. He's a fit kid. And I said, well, can you do 25 push-ups for, you know, 200 days? Whatever the number is, you know, and he was like, I think so. Yeah, I could do that.
Brilliant.
And then I put the goal. Here's the goal, 5,000 push-up challenge. Here's the prize, phone. So it's all there. You know, you know the carrot. You see the stick, what you're working for. You have a way to record it. And he wanted to start with 50 push-ups a day. So it was 50 push-ups a day.
He wanted that phone in 100 days, not 10.
Yeah, for 100 days. And David and Christine, it was shocking. After like the first 10 days on the weekends, he was like, can I do 100 today? Can I do 150? When he got to wanting to do 200 a day, like towards the end, his mom, you know, Kim, his mom was like, no. You're 11. That's just a little bit too much, young man.
Right.
But
right.
So I don't know if you can see this picture.
Stop.
He ended up.
Oh, man.
Doing. Amazing. the 5,000 push-ups, and he ended up getting his, at that time, his iPhone 12. And I also made him, a plaque, you know, 5,000 push-up club, you know, his name, Adrian, blah, 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 on there, and he puts it on his wall. And what's so beautiful about this is when he's got something, you know, piano, he's trying to play for release. Oh, that's so hard. And I said, but you're the kid who did 5,000 push-ups.
Right. He'll take that for the rest of his life. It'll give him,
right.
He can do anything. Yeah. That's an amazing lesson. Amazing.
Yeah. And then I guess, again, remember, goals are for people who want to win once. Systems are for people who want to win repeatedly. And these are kids, man. These are the people that are going to be the future of who we are. So we need to, you know, we need to start to build strong, young, resilient human beings.
That's so beautifully said. And really, like, it's so motivating. And I think that, and I'm going to steal it. It's not going to be 5,000 push-ups, but for whatever version of it, I'm going to steal it. Yes.
Unattainable.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
And through a system, you can attain it. It's amazing. Brilliant, dude.
Yeah.
I love that.
What? You know, it's interesting. You know, one of my heroes, you know, growing up was Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, the king of the 90s. I think, you know, those are the True Lies days, the Total Recall days. And, you know, he was just such an inspiration. And on Netflix, they had a documentary about him and his life. And, you know, it was inspiring to see. And then, you know, what's really strange is, you know, I had someone just reach out to me recently and said, you know, you're my Arnold. And I was like, what? You know, because it looks, you know, I think sometimes, you know, for me, I always set big goals and I don't achieve, I would say, 90% of my goals. And, you know, try and then working to still learn to love the progress, to stay hungry. You know, those are things that you have to do, you know, throughout, you know, this, what I've been with. We've been here, what, 30 years, 35 years? When did you guys get here?
91, I think, right?
I'm in New York now, but it was 90. We went after our show, 91, right?
Yeah.
You guys both look way too young. Like, it's just, I can't believe.
You too, like, dude. You look like Billy Crudup, to be honest. Yeah. Right?
I don't know. I've never heard that. But it's hard. I have to be older than you guys because I look at you guys and I think, I can't even believe how great you guys look.
You've got a few years on us. Because you were talking about how old you were when you started the show. And I graduated high school in 1989. So you're.
Oh, yeah. I got quite a bit. That's why you look so much younger.
You only got a few years on us. Wait.
I just thought I was using the wrong anti-aging cream.
Not at all.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, this is Paris Hilton. Trapped in Treatment is back, and this season we're taking on WASP.
They held us in dog cages. They starved us. They beat us. They burned us and subject us to really horrible, cruel and unusual punishment.
After my personal experience at Provo Canyon School, I was shocked to learn that a man named Robert Litchfield, a man who got his start at the school that I went to, would go on to create a multi-million dollar empire.
He was trying to brand us, so we were going to become the McDonald's of kid treatment.
The Worldwide Association of Specialty Programs and Schools.
They prey on, you know, a parent's really natural and beautiful love for their children in a really, really, unfortunately, effective way.
At this time in my life now, if someone presented this program to me, and not just because I've already experienced it, sham, scam, beware.
Listen to season 2 of Trapped in Treatment on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I want to talk about something. You had a heart attack in 2013?
Yeah, this should be my 10-year life adversity.
What?
Wow.
Oh, my God. How the hell did that happen?
And you wrote a book about it.
An athlete.
Called F Dying. Yes?
Yep. Yes. I've actually, you know, written 2 books. And, you know, if there we go again about expectations. You know, when I, you know, I've written a bunch of screenplays, sold screenplays, wrote and directed a movie, you know, done a lot of writing things. And it was interesting because I was a guy who couldn't type. And I was a guy, you know, who was like, read a book. Why? You know, back in college. But you know, so when I lived, I played football in Italy for a year, professional football, and they didn't have, American TV. And they didn't. Yeah, this is before cable and satellite, and they didn't have American radio in the small town I was living outside of Milan. And so I started reading books. Like I was 22 years old, and I just fell in love with books. This idea that there's this condensed knowledge that someone has a whole lifetime of expertise and nonfiction, and they go and they put it into a book, and I can read that book in 4 to 6 hours. I can soak in all that knowledge. I just love books. But so I started to say I wanted to write, and you know, I was really, really intimidated. I won't go into the long story of how long it took me to type, but I wrote for 7 years. I wrote screenplays for 7 years before I finally sold something, which was crazy. And then after American Gladiators was over, someone, you know, talked about, like, you know, hey, your life story is kind of interesting. And I said, oh, maybe I'll write a book, you know. But I was so intimidated because to me, books, that was like my 500,000 push-up challenge, writing a book. Because to me, books was something that smart people wrote. Not guys who wore spandex on TV.
The title is F Dying, right?
Well, that's the second book. The first book is called Gladiator,
a true story
of Roy's Rage Redemption. And that was the IP that I sold to Netflix when I sold them Muscles of Mayhem, the docuseries.
Oh, okay, great. And that was in 2009, yes?
Yes. And based upon that book, now I'm developing a scripted TV series about a guy coming to Hollywood in his 90s who happens to find fame and fortune in on a show called American Gladiators.
Oh, very interesting.
And just as he's leaving town, passing the Hollywood sign, giving it the finger, his beeper goes off.
Yep.
That's the trailer. I love it.
That's the trailer. Yeah, so that's, F. Dying was from the heart attack. Look, when, you know, I've got a buddy, and I'll leave you guys on this note, and it was just, he was over this past weekend, and he's 47 years old, and he's been diagnosed with ALS. And it's just like when you face your mortality, things that were important to you just 1 second earlier no longer have significance. And it was very similar when I had the heart attack and I thought I was going to die. My whole list of hierarchies and values in my life changed in the blink of an eye. I always say sports taught me about life, but almost dying taught me how to live. And I had so many profound changes just of how I wanted to live my life, because when I was in the emergency room and I didn't know if I was going to live or die, there was only two things that were important to me. One was letting the people that I love know that I love them. Two, having those people I loved close to me. And when I recovered from my heart attack after the surgery, I took that to heart and I wanted to remember that and all these other things I learned over the year. So I wrote a book about, you know, facing your mortality, how it changes your life, and how even if you don't have something like a heart attack or a life-threatening disease, how you can still use these principles to live a more fulfilled life. So that's what the second book is about.
Wow.
Dana, this is like one of the most inspiring interviews I've ever been involved in.
Yeah.
David, I heard you say that's the last guest.
Danny, not true. But Danny, I do want to just say, for your friend who was just diagnosed with ALS, my husband and I work very closely with an organization called Project ALS. We've worked, it's a wonderful organization over the last 25 years or so, because we had a very dear friend who was diagnosed in her 30s. And if he needs support, if he is looking for, this is a wonderful, three sisters started it when their sister was diagnosed. And I just want to offer that to you. We work very closely with them. We're hosting their benefit this year. We are, and have known so many people impacted by that disease. And my love and you know, support goes out to him. But if there's anything he needs, please reach out to me, and I'd love to connect him with this organization, because they're wonderful.
Very kind of you. He was actually diagnosed 2 years ago, and he was here. He was here for this weekend, you know, for Labor Day. So. Yeah, he's doing fantastic. He hasn't been public about this yet, but he's coming out public because he's an entertainer. And I will, once this is over, let's make sure our reps exchange our information, because I'll connect you with him. And I was so blown away by him, because he has the acute sense of living.
Yes.
Of really living. You know, where I think, you know, like myself before the heart attack, I always thought time was guaranteed. You know, you think time is guaranteed. And then when you realize that it's not guaranteed for anyone, that you no longer become a someday kind of person. Right. You find out what's important to you and you do them now, because and it's really, really hard to take that to heart and to live it like that. And he's not feeling sorry for himself. He goes, look, because I don't know if you know, 60 people have survived. Do you know this, Christine, from ALS? 60 people.
60.
6-0.
60.
6-0 yes. People have beat the disease.
Yeah. And
his,
you know.
His goal is to be 61. He's on fire for it. He's on fire for it. And good, just being him, around him and being on fire, seeing him this fire and this quest for life, just it really, you know, gave me brand new enthusiasm, which I hope at the end of our conversation and the audience listening to this, that's the one thing they can take away is, you know, get busy living. Just get busy living. You're so we're so busy calling, you know, traffic traumatic, or, you know, causing, you know, missing a flight, a disaster, you know, being stuck in an airport. Oh, the worst thing that ever happened. No, right. You know, learn to use your words effectively for what's really happening, you know, and learn to just stop complaining and get busy living. Get busy living your life day by day.
Well,
incredible message to end this. I love this, Danny. Thank you so much for joining us.
This Cheers, everybody. Watch pleasure. Muscles and Mayhem. Watch Muscles and Mayhem. It's still on Netflix.
I watched the trailer this morning. It looks incredible.
David, you're a slacker. It's been out for 6 weeks. Come on.
watch the whole thing tonight.
You got to watch it. All right, guys. I appreciate you guys.
Congratulations on everything. You are a total treat. It was wonderful meeting you, and I look forward to staying connected for sure.
Yeah, now it's hammer time. I got to go work out.
Yes. 5,000 push-ups.
Cheers.
Okay, bye.
Thanks, Danny.
Wow, just talk about inspirational. You said it.
I mean, seriously, the thing I love about doing this podcast is that people that I'm not familiar with sometimes become the most amazing conversations I've ever had. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't watch American Gladiators, to be honest.
Right.
But I looked at it before we did the interview, but mm-hmm. what an amazing guy.
Yeah, the story is incredible. And similarly, like, it wasn't a show that I watched regularly. I just always remember it being on.
Right.
And I remember the character names. And I even remember, like, you know, when we were doing Dodgeball, that it was sort of like the other team was sort of based on those gladiators. Like, we all thought that was like, they all had funny names like that too. That. The Globo Gym, Ben's team, not the average Joe's. But, you know, it was so iconic. And then to just get to know a guy who's really lived his life, like he said, went through all the ups and downs of it all, of the fame and the success and losing it and getting, and I just feel like what a great takeaway.
Yeah, I mean, an amazing life that he's living, and that lesson for his son, to give him something that seems completely impossible, but to put a system in there and show him in 100 days you can do this.
We're gonna come up with something.
Everyone, thank you for listening. This was a great one.
Yes, thanks. And we'll get you back next week. See you then.
Another good one. Have a great week, everyone.
Thanks for listening. Make sure to subscribe and give us 5 stars.
And please follow us on Instagram at HeyDudeTheNineties Called. See you next time.
Hey guys, this is Paris Hilton. Trapped in Treatment is back, and this season we're taking on WASP, the Worldwide Association of Specialty Programs and Schools.
They held us in dog cages. They starved us. They beat us.
He was trying to brand us. So we were going to become the McDonald's of kid treatment.
Join my host as they unravel the story of the largest and most shocking organization in the history of the troubled teen industry. Listen to season 2 of Trapped in Treatment on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like $1 million.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast, Climbing in Heels, is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.